Okay, welcome back to a second, it's part two of the podcast with just Kyle and I talking some MLL. So we got a bunch of different things to talk about. The semifinals wrapped up, we're going to preview the championship game. We can talk MLL awards, and we'll maybe get into a little bit of Kyle and Chris Rosenthal's Space Jam team. I got some questions about some of those selections that I think he needs to, needs to defend.
I didn't make all the selections. It's a team effort, man. That was a true collab with me and Chris Rosie. So some I might not be able to answer all your questions.
You put your name on it, so you're gonna have to defend them.
I will defend it gladly.
Do we want to start with the news that was just announced in the past hour?
Yeah, sure.
The MVP news, is that the final postseason award, or is there one more?
I believe it's the final postseason award.
So the MLL MVP for 2016 is, of course, Tom Schreiber, midfielder from the Ohio Machine.
Everyone expected it, though.
No, I say of course, because I assume most people who are listening to this probably already know.
Did you expect it?
I don't know how to say that I expected it. I'm not surprised. I don't think
who would you have expected, though?
Well, I think given that Pinnell won the Offensive Player of the Year, I think in a year like this despite the fact that Pinnell set the single season record for points, I'm not sure that he was like sort of the clear cut sort of, without a doubt, nobody else is even close, best player in the league. It seemed like this was going to be a year with a split award, where the MVP wasn't going to win the Offensive Player of the Year. And so I wouldn't have picked him, or I wouldn't have expected him, given that I knew he won Offensive Player of the Year, if that makes sense.
Okay, who would you have picked? Who would you have expected?
I thought maybe it was going to be Rabel, just because 72 points from a midfielder is insane, and it's not difficult to make the case that 72 points from a midfielder is more valuable than 74 points from an attackman.
Right.
So, just given he's not there, he's not on the field for every possession. He gets caught on defense sometimes. He's not there out there on fast breaks and transition opportunities to get some easy points there. A 4-on-3 fast break. So I think he had to be in the discussion. I mean, I think Schreiber had to be in the discussion. Putting up 36 assists in the midfield is an incredible number.
It's insane. It's an insane number. I think if someone just saw that number, they would vote on. If you didn't know the name of the player and you just saw their stats, I think people would vote for Schreiber just based on that number. I think that's the kicker in all the arguments.
But I think being a midfielder though is important in that number.
Yes.
As well.
Totally. Absolutely. I think most people thought it was going to be Rabel. I think a lot of people I talked to thought it was going to be Rabel. And when I found out it was Schreiber, I was like, oh, that's awesome. That's great. The fact that he won it by so much, I think it's surprising, because he won it by 8 points in the voting system. And six of his 6 points came from third place votes, which is weird. I mean, it's not the deciding thing, but I think the weirder part of that is that, you know, Schreiber won with 38 points. Rabel won with got second with 30, and then Joel Walters got third with 27. That seemed very high for me. Not because Walters doesn't deserve it. I just couldn't think of that third guy. And Walters makes sense, but he's not the guy that popped into my head. What do you make of that?
We talked about this, I guess, before the podcast. But my Joel Walters theory was that I think he had some momentum for MVP. I think 3-4 weeks ago, when Chesapeake was really on that hot streak, when they were leading, on the top of the league before they lost their last couple of games and missed the playoffs, and so I think some of that is carryover from then that I think people he was on people's minds going into the last couple of weeks, and I think that resulted in him getting some votes that maybe if you just hadn't thought about it until after the season ended. He maybe a couple more votes than he would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think let's kind of transition into the other news story going into the championship game. which I broke on Twitter. Timestamps don't lie, fam. I broke it. It's cool. Michael Noon will be eligible to play in the championship game despite losing his appeal, but then having the appeal go to arbitration, which... Wait, what? What?
Yeah, I was very confused by this as well, just because... Isn't the appeal arbitration? Like, those words are often synonyms, appeal and arbitration.
Yes. Apparently it just goes to arbitration if the appeal is also contested, and an outside party needs to be called in. Apparently that can't happen until after the championship game. Seems a little convenient. Seems a little like the league going, maybe we shouldn't have suspended it for two games.
But then they upheld the appeal.
And then they upheld the appeal. It doesn't make any sense.
They already had a chance to go back on that.
Right. So let me backtrack first, because I've been getting some heat for this. And I've done some research, and I don't think I was necessarily wrong, because you can't appeal a one-game suspension in the MLL. That's true. So when I heard that Noon got suspended, I assumed that you could not appeal the suspension because you can't appeal a one game. Right?
Right.
We
should say, this goes back to... some of this heat is from... I probably started it because on the last podcast, you said there... I asked you if there was an appeal, and you said there wouldn't be.
Right. So...
And then I tweeted about it.
You know why I said that? Because there never has been one. Because no one's been suspended for two games except for, like... Casey Powell for, like, taking a wild swing at Mike Evans, like, years ago. And apparently this two-game rule versus one-game rule has been on the MLL books since 2005. Now, there were a lot of suspensions early in the league. There was fighting early in the MLL. I don't know if people, like, remember that. But, like, there was some fighting going on.
There was fighting last year. Matt Janowski and what defender?
Yeah, but not, like, real fighting. I mean, like, there was fighting, like a hockey fight allowed for, like, the first, like, two or three years. But, like, as a penalty, I mean, like, it wasn't an automatic ejection to fight. It was, like, hockey. That did not last long, obviously, because fighting on feet is way different than fighting on skates. So when they amended the rule and they had it, basically players can get suspended for one game and it's like something that happens. Like the fact that like more suspensions aren't happening and it is insane. But I think the thing that upset everyone in this particular case wasn't that he hit Rabel high. Like everyone like kind of expected there to be punishment for that because it was late and it was high. But when you contrast what Noon did with what Dave Lawson did to Noble, and you play the videos next to each other or in succession, there's zero chance, if you're a rational human being, that you think the Noon hit is worse. Period. End of story.
Oh, yeah.
We're not having a discussion about it. If you think the Noon hit is worse, you are a moron. Because pulling someone down from the back and having their helmet pop off and then their back landing on the helmet and looking like they've broken their back on the helmet that was on their head is always worse than getting hit while you're wearing a helmet. And I just want that to be clear before we say anything about anything else. Okay?
And I think that was, if I remember correctly, that was sort of exactly, that's what I thought. That was more or less my viewpoint last week on the podcast, right?
That was pretty much your viewpoint. And I think, you know, and people digging me for saying there wouldn't be an appeal, it's because there hasn't ever been one. And it's a rule that's,
not available to the public. I tweeted that I wasn't sure how to feel about the fact that you didn't know about that. I have since decided that you are completely forgiven.
Yeah.
Because there's no rational way that anyone should have expected you to know. It would have been an incredible feat of knowledge had you known.
Well, people in the league didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, okay, that's like if I need to take an L on that, that's fine. Like, I'll take an L. But the fact of the matter is, I was right, just not on the circumstance, because the two game thing is what changes all the rules, apparently, which is like now we have things like appeals and arbitration involved. No one's ever appealed a suspension. You get not just one appeal. Yeah.
You can now just not only get one appeal, you get a second. There's this arbitration, which did anybody know about that before now?
No. No. Nobody.
And just seems really weird that if you're going to go to an outside arbitrator, why wouldn't you just appeal it to that, to the arbitrator?
I don't know. I don't have it because they have one guy doing discipline, and that's stupid to begin with. And when they interviewed him and I watched the interview, it was like, oh, yeah, no, you're wrong. So I don't have a problem saying people are wrong, including myself. So I was wrong to say there was no appeal, but again, there's no way I could have known because the other suspension.
Well, we'll forgive you for being wrong. You're allowed to be wrong every once in a while.
That's fair. So speaking of being wrong, MLL Championship. Do we want to recap semis first?
Why don't we do brief recaps with some thoughts on what happened.
Brief recap. Tell me your thoughts on Ohio Charlotte.
It just looked like they didn't have an answer for Ohio's offense.
How much percentage-wise worse would you put the Hounds versus the Machine in that game? How much worse were they? Talent-wise.
Percentage-wise, I'm not sure how to express it as a percentage. I thought the Machine were definitely better. That just looked to me like a better team.
Like twice as good?
I think twice as good relative to, like, people who can't play lacrosse. Certainly not.
Okay. What I'm trying to say, and what I'm setting you up for, is that there was all this controversy about all these teams being 8-6, and Charlotte being the team that made it in under the wire with all the tiebreakers. Do you think that any of the other 8-6 teams would have given Ohio a better game than Charlotte?
I don't want to say that because in a one game sample size, it's always hard to tell. But I think, I agreed when we talked about this last week that I thought Rochester certainly, though Jordan Wolf being injured does change up what they look like a little bit. But I thought Rochester and Chesapeake were better teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree.
If picking the playoff teams were just up to me in terms of who I would have picked to be most deserving, I would have put those teams in with Ohio, and then I would probably toss up between Denver and New York for the fourth spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, numbers-wise, that definitely shakes out. I think, you know, the big problem in this game for the Hounds was, you know, Chanichuk going over. You know, that's a 50-point-plus score in the regular season. Him going over was tough. Them not playing with John Hawes was a huge blow to them. They didn't, you know, I think people thought he was going to play, but he had a huge gash in his leg from the week prior's game against Chesapeake. So I think him not being available really hurt them more than I think than people realized. But if you look at their, you know, their score totals and any of the box scores from the regular season, and you saw what Hawes was responsible for versus what Chanichuk and Sankey are responsible for, then you understand that's like basically one third of your top three gone, really affecting your bottom line as far as the offense goes. I thought Dylan Donahue played really well for the Hounds, but I think he was kind of alone in that role, and he did a lot of great stuff off ball that he didn't have the opportunity to do because Charlotte was trying to match Ohio's possessions, like the length of the possession, to like kind of keep it close, and they just didn't have the personnel to do it, you know, and they fell short, and that's what happens.
I think that's definitely fair, and I mean John Grant Jr. putting up six after coming off of his 10-goal game, putting up another six, and some of those were just not, I thought, illustrated were just not fair that he's getting those type of looks,
right?
You know, uncontested in front of the goal. That one was off a feed from Baum from behind the net, and then another like I think Marcus Holman picked up a ground ball and found him in transition. He's just all alone in front of the net.
Yep,
not fair to the goalie.
That was a killer. I think that was the killer goal. Also, I mean, The quintessential John Grant Jr. on the Machine play is the man up play where he fakes a lefty pass and then goes all the way around the world to hit Holman, who had fallen down, getting up on like from underneath GLE and scoring. That was the most incredible Just such an incredible play, because who else in the game sees that pass and also makes it that way because it's the fastest way to make it and also gets the pass there? It was an incredible play, and if you think that Ohio is really a lock to win it, that would be the play I would point to. Is like, yeah, you're probably right. I mean, I think I have other thoughts, but let's recap the other semifinal between Denver and New York real quick. What were your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a fitting end to New York's season. That I'm not you've watched more and much more closely that I have to figure out exactly what, I'm not sure exactly what New York's issues were, but it just seems to me like they lost a little bit of the hunger coming off of the championship last year.
Yeah, I just think their defense is atrocious. It was an atrocious display. They lost the game because they took a ton of penalties. They got in their own heads, and you know, Denver, you can't give Denver space because Denver will score. Denver has so many guys that can score in so many different ways that you just cannot, absolutely cannot give them a break. You can't give them an opening because they'll just kick the door down. You know, you can't crack the door for the chain because they'll kick through the chain. And that's what Denver does. And I actually, you know, in my preview, I wrote the specific preview for this semifinal. Everything I said came true. Honestly, like I read through it and watched the game and, you know, I thought Jack Kelly would have a transcendent performance. And guess what? He did. I mean, he didn't have 34 saves like all the idiots that put he had 34 saves said he had.
Well, that's what the box score had. And I think the confusion was whoever was doing the stats for that game, they didn't realize the distinction between shots and shots on goal. Oh, right? Yeah. They just put everything as a shot on goal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's definitely what happened. I'm just saying, you know,
he didn't have 34 saves. New York had 34 shots that did not score.
Right. And you know, he did finish with 19. You know, that's wild. I mean, I was trying to keep track during the broadcast. And then when I saw the stats afterwards, I was like, oh, those are wrong. Cool. You don't have to have the stats right for the semifinal game. No, don't do that. Heaven forbid you have the stats right for the two of the most important games of your season. But, you know, him finishing with 19 saves is indicative of his ascendance and also how Denver plays, because it's wide open. And I think that the interesting contrast in the championship game, before I get too far into it, is Ohio is a team that likes to control the game, and Denver is a team that does not want to control the game. They want to turn it into a track meet. They want a fun and gun. That's what they want to do. And the tendency of all these pro players, by the way, is to play that way because that is the most fun way to play lacrosse. It's not the most successful way to win games at any level, but I think with the shot clock, it's easier in the MLL. But Ohio is a team that, despite all the talent to play fun and gun, still tries to control the game and put, you know, score early. You saw it in the semifinal against the Hounds. Score early, put pressure on the other team, you know, put your foot on their chest, push them down a little bit, make sure they can't come back against you, and then you get to score in transition. And I think that if Ohio plays like that against Denver, and Denver, you know, has the ability to keep it close and open the game up a little bit, that's going to work against Ohio more than it's going to work against Denver.
Yeah, well, I think the thing about Ohio, though, they have – the reason that not playing so wild and up and down in transition works for them is they have – when they can run out their best six guys on offense, they can score in settled situations because there's just so much talent with those six guys.
Right. But the thing is, when they've lost games this year – and they've still lost six games, by the way. They lost those games because they took really bad shots in the beginning of the shot clock. So you would have guys like Holman, or even, you know, the first sub off the bench is usually like, you know, Schreiber, and they would have a great matchup and they would clear and get that matchup and take a shot just because they knew they had the best matchup, and goalies would save it in transition and then they would get scored on. You saw that happen against Atlanta most recently in their season where they just could not get those Ohio needs to score early. And they could not get those necessary goals against Atlanta in their last game against Atlanta, and that's why they lost. Like, really, by the way, not just lost, but like really lost. Like, got beaten up because they couldn't convert first chance points. And I think that a goalie like Kelly, who, by the way, does not give up a lot of rebounds, you're going to have to score on that first chance, okay? Cipriano gives up rebounds like they're candy. You know, like guys like Fiorito give up a ton of rebounds. So Ohio's had success against teams like that, getting the second chance points. You saw at least one of Junior's goals was a second chance rebound. So I think going into this game, it's important to see the style of the teams and how Ohio, you know, is going to want to control the game. And by the way, Ken, I don't think that they can't do this, but I think that's what they want to do. And when they can't do what they want to do, things don't go well for them. They need to have the control. Denver doesn't want the control. Denver wants chaos. They want chaos, and that's all they want.
I mean, some of their rookie additions are guys who come from teams that thrived in the chaos in college, in Kavanaugh and Bailey Tills.
Right.
At Brown and, or Notre Dame and Brown, respectively, that were up and down, the two fastest teams in the country in terms of possessions per game.
Yeah.
Fit very well right into that style.
So you're still picking Ohio.
It worked for me last week.
All right.
I'm still all picking right. Ohio. I'm still going to wear my Tilt Ohio Machine shirt.
Nice.
On game day.
Nice.
2-0 with that formula.
Make sure you tweet that out.
I am going to tweet it out. I've also tweeted it out twice. So we're going to keep another one of those going for good luck.
So for our coverage for Is on the Cross here, we're Chris Rosenthal is writing the "This Is Why Ohio Will Win" article. And actually, right now, if you go to Inside the Cross, you can check out, by the time this posts, that will be up, as well as Matt Kinnear's deep dive with John Grant Jr., which, you know, I've had a chance to read, and it's pretty crazy. There's some John Grant Jr. connections that I think a lot of you guys don't know about. So I would definitely check that article out. I will be writing how the Outlaws will win, just by virtue of Chris writing the Ohio one. But also, I think they can. I do think they can, and I think the reasons for it are the ones that I've already gone over. Is they have a great goalie in Jack Kelly. They have a hot goalie. Not that Scott Rogers isn't hot, by the way. Scott Rogers had 20 saves, but I'll tell you what. Denver gets way better shots than Charlotte's going to take, that Charlotte took last week. Way better shots. Because they have much better cutters off ball. Much, much, much better. And I think that Denver also has, you know, as good dodging midfielders? Question mark? As good? Like, Snyder and Sieverts are no joke. I mean, sure, Ohio has Harrison that's better. Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of up-top kind of downhill dodging from both teams early on. And I think that whichever team sticks those shots is going to be in the pole position to win the game. I think Denver's off-ball stuff is great. I think Ohio, for all that's made of the Ohio defense and the noon, you know, suspension, non-suspension, him being allowed to play, I don't think that those poles match up particularly well against back cutters. I think all those guys, you know, Tills, Law is one of the best back cutters in the league. Even Kavanaugh is really just a masterful, you know.
Well, yeah, Kavanaugh, I think it's one of the most underrated parts of his game that people think of him as a dodging on-ball guy, but he's a tremendous off-ball player.
He really is, and you know, I think him being a lefty is huge for them. I think people really discount Noah Molnar in the defensive midfield for Denver, and also Greg Downing. Who the ageless Greg Downing, who is the only other lefty like on the team except for Kavanaugh, who was great against New York, by the way. Both of those players were
stellar. To be fair, though, when you say people discount them, how many people out there are really paying attention to MLL short stick D-mids?
Well, you know, I do. I mean, I don't.
Right.
According to certain people, I don't care, and I don't look at D-mids ever, but whatever. I mean, I definitely know who's good and who's not good.
I know. I just think it's funny that you're you're alluding that there are a bunch of people out there who are paying attention to MLL Shortstick Demids.
Yeah, you know who they are? They're Shortstick MLL Demids themselves. That's the only other people that care about MLL Shortstick Demids. But, you know, hey,
I don't think that's quite fair, but they're few and far between, certainly.
I will say that Ohio also has two excellent pairs of Demids in Dan Groot and Dominique Alexander. And also, you know, having a guy like Earnhardt come out for Ohio, who is an absolute transition player, the only wild card on the entire, like, Ohio team, except for Junior, is kind of something great that they can enact if they get into a position that he can impact the game, because he had two goals last week against the Hounds, and they were both in transition. Both kind of created by his ability to run with the ball in transition, key it, and also finish it. And I think he's one of the better players in this championship game to watch, even though he's a D-mid. But again, I'm like burying the lead, because what we really want to see are these amazing offenses just go to town on each other, right? That's what we really want.
I think that's with the MLL, with the two-pointer, the 60-second shot clock, that's what you watch the MLL for.
Right.
I don't think anybody's watching MLL for defense.
No. Well, defenders are. Demons are, but no one else. No one that likes scoring. And there's people that don't like scoring. There's people that like defensive lacrosse somewhere. You like defensive lacrosse.
I think...
You do.
No. I don't necessarily think I differ. I don't try to differentiate between defensive and offensive. I like to watch people try to score. I'm not as concerned about if they're successful, but... I don't want to see people passing it around the perimeter and waiting to attack. I want to see people attack.
Well, that's what Ohio's going to do.
Right, and I think that's one of the reasons to watch the MLL, is that with a 60-second shot clock, really no, but there's everything is for real. There aren't a bunch of dummy dodges.
Right.
And people waiting to go. You know, it's for real. They're trying to score almost every
right.
time.
Well, I mean, I think Ohio is the team that you could say does not fall into that from time to time. And they do use dummy dodges, and they do use little picks and rubs and screens. But I think if you really want to watch, like, a fun offense go to work, I think it's Denver. I think Denver's – listen, and this is crazy to say, because, you know, Ohio has the MVP. They have John Grant Jr. He's a transcendent player. I ranked him as the number one player in the last 15 years of the MLL when I wrote the article last year. This is no shots. And when I say no shots, I mean no shots. But watching Ohio's defense play as a – offense play as a unit is so much fun. I mean, just seeing how they run off of picks and slip underneath defenders that turn their head, and they're so opportunistic, and they'll try crazy things. You know, Westberg will do real pick and like basketball pick and rolls to his right hand and get crazy shots. He'll dive at the net. Bailey Tills will go between his legs and over the top of his head and no look. And, you know, Kavanaugh will step down from anywhere, even though he's one of the smaller players on the field. Like, they're just really exciting to watch. And, you know, I get on the Outlaws a lot. When they were 2-6, I was the first person that was like, yo, you're terrible. I told you you'd be terrible going into the season. You're terrible. And now they're in the championship game. Again, this is me pointing out that I'm wrong. And I hope that Matt Bachlin is listening to this, because he's the one who always chirps when I say they're not good. And I don't hear any positive chirps back at me when I say that you're good now. I don't hear that. It's always, oh, you're wrong. Oh, you're wrong about the Outlaws. We're so good. Why do we even play the games?
Yeah, but that's what happens.
I know. I just want to make it clear.
That's what happens. You can't expect guys to point out every time you say something good about them as much as they're going to point out when you chirp at them and say they're not good.
Yeah, I mean,
it's locker room material, bulletin board material.
I live there. That's where I live. It's a nice place to be. It's a fun place to be.
It means that you're important if you're important enough to go up on the bulletin
board.
Well,
they just think I'm an idiot, but that's fine too. I don't really care. It's fun to speculate what's going to happen in this game. I'm going down to cover it solo for Inside Lacrosse. Hopefully we'll get that up Saturday night. The game's going to be on CBS Sportsnet. I assume you'll be watching. Yes?
Yes, I will. I've been taking to I kind of live snap them.
Oh, okay.
I do a lot on Snapchat.
Nice.
Because I feel like Twitter is sort of covered. Other people have the Twitter world. Mostly you. I don't have much to add based to your tweets. So I visit Twitter every once in a while. But I've been getting more into doing Snapchat stuff during games.
Nice. So remember, when we tell you what Patrick's Snapchat is at the end of the podcast,
it's at Lax Film Room.
We're going to say it again when we get to the end. Make sure you follow Patrick on Snapchat for.
And I guess now I have to do it because I've promised everybody that I'm going to.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just did. So. I just figured you would. Anything else we can go through? Any other positions, matchups, kind of entice you?
Yeah. I was going to say before, maybe we'll come back at the end. I think of something, but I wanted to talk. Postseason awards.
Okay.
Something we didn't get into. So we have, where are you going to start? Jack Kelly, Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. We kind of covered that last week. I think it's,
that's true.
That I think it's appropriate. And you know, I think it's, you know, him, it was, that was probably the closest race, I think, between him, Miles Jones and Ryan Brown. But you know, Kelly definitely proving that he deserved to win the award by getting 19 saves in the semifinal and living up to my Tillman Johnson comparison. Thank you, Jack Kelly, for that. Appreciate it. I think that's really cool. I think what's the next one? Chandon Schuck winning most improved.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I think that's fair, too. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I just – my only thought would be I guess he was already a guy who I thought was pretty good. Maybe I'm overestimating, misremembering how good he was in the past, but I guess the differential between his performance this year, he certainly was better, but I just am not sure. I'm not sure if there's anybody else who I have had trouble thinking of somebody, but is there potential for just, that would just be my one question, I guess, is in terms of how much did he really improve considering how good he's been in the past?
I think statistically, it was easily his best season. I think the only, you know,
oh,
I
yeah,
actually
no,
thought...
Oh, yeah, no, not disputing that.
Yeah.
I'm not disputing that it was his best season. I guess I'm not surprised, you know, that he had, you know, that he's one of the best midfielders in the MLL.
Yeah, I think some people would be, and that's why he won the award. I think he.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And as I said, I don't necessarily have somebody else who I thought was more deserving,
right,
of the award. So it's difficult for me to say that he wasn't. But that's just my thought. Is I just am a little bit. I already thought he was pretty good. So it's there potentially is somebody who was a little bit more below the radar, you could argue, you know, improved by more because they went from, you know, nobody or, you know, on the fringes of the league to a solid starter or something like that, rather than somebody who went from, you know, a good midfielder to one of the
right.
best.
Right. I would have probably, I mean, we don't get votes, the GMs and the coaches vote, but I think I might have thrown in for Joe Nardella. I think just in general, his ability this year, I think, was much higher, and his ball retention was better. In the past, other teams would jump him, and he would turn it over. I think he was a lot more confident, a lot stronger with the ball this year. He would probably have been my pick.
Right, I think that's a good example of somebody who wasn't, though arguably was the most prominent All-Star snub. But
yeah, that made no sense.
But wasn't
that was stupid.
Yeah. But maybe wasn't. Though I guess he was right behind. The thing is, this year he just didn't take that many. He didn't take as many face-offs as the Gregs, Grenlian, and I mean, how to pronounce his last name, Pasculdian.
Pasculdian.
That butchered it. Okay, however you want to pronounce it. The Ohio Machine faceoff guy, Greg.
Yeah, and also, I think it's funny with faceoff guys, you can tell how good they are because of how much they frustrate the other guy. And I think that's why I really like Nardella this year, because he made Beast and Pasculdian so mad every time they faced off against each other. Pasculdian kicked his stick at the end of a face-off when they played the Cannons earlier in the year. I mean, that's pretty wild to get someone that fired up. They're just going to kick your stick afterwards. That was pretty cool. So, you know, I wanted to give a shout-out to him. I thought he did really well. Defensive Player of the Year, we had a tie.
I think it's interesting.
El Dubla. They're both from the same team.
Off of your Toon Squad. They are from the same team, which is also, I thought, interesting.
Yeah. I think that's a result of this vote being wildly split, if I'm honest. Like, there's a lot, like, if you look at the actual, like, breakdown of the voting, they each got 2 first place votes, and Scott Ratliff got 3 first place votes and still lost. So I think that's an interesting kind of breakdown of how it went. They basically won on the strength of 4 second place votes each to accumulate 22 total points and tie for the win. Did you think Ratliff was going to win this?
I think it's tough for him to win it just because of the record. That when you have 7 teams that tie for first, it's kind of tough to vote for guys from those last 2 teams to be the best, you know, the best defensive player in the league. Especially on defense, where you don't really have the individual stats to point out about somebody. I think it's hard to argue that he isn't the best player in the league. But I don't necessarily think it was a snub, or that he was clearly deserving of the award.
Yeah, that's a fair criticism, I guess, or take. I was surprised at the Manly selection, if I'm honest. I was not super surprised at Joel White. I thought it was between White, Ratliff, and Jackson Place, with Karalunas being that other guy. But Karalunas got 2 second place votes, and that's it. I think it's interesting to see, you know, all the players in here that maybe people, you know, a lot of people haven't heard of. Like, you know, Brian Phipps got 2 first place votes. Matt Dunn from another Rattlers defender got 2 first place votes. That must have been some coach that was super impressed with him. Tucker Durkin, 6 third place votes. That's probably just because he's on Florida. And when you're on Florida, you're on an island, and there's no such thing as team defense. So how can you vote for anybody else in that situation? I think this is the most interesting breakdown. Just going through.
And really, how many votes? I don't have the breakdown, but how many votes did Fletcher get?
Fletcher actually got 2 first place votes and 3 third place votes, but 0 second place votes. So he came in.
Well, those
5th.
2 first place votes are probably from Spalina and the Wizards.
That's safe.
But anyway, it's just interesting because he's the reigning defensive player of the year.
He did not have a good year. Like, listen, just watching defenders and...
No, and I'm not saying he should have won it again, but it just is, when you talk about splitting the vote, he's another guy who I figured...
Right, and Mike Evans is in there, too. He got 6th place. He had 2 first place and 2 third. I think, you know, it's an interesting award to have awarded to 2 guys on the same team. I think that's the weirdest thing about, you know, the vote.
Kind of, except they gave up. It wasn't really close. The Rattlers had the best defense. They gave up the fewest goals. I mean, in a league where the schedules are, for all intents and purposes, the same. They're not exactly the same because you have a 19 league, 14 games, and not everybody can play everybody twice. But it's not like they're wildly... It's not like the strength of schedule is wildly different. So just looking at the Rattlers gave up the fewest goals is a pretty good measure. They were the best defense. So for them to have 2 guys getting a lot of votes isn't that much of a surprise.
Yeah, I think, those players are known also for their offensive abilities, you know, to join the attack in transition, to even Joel White, you know, on the wing, on faceoffs. And I wonder if, you know, is this award just basically, are you the best one-on-one defender? Or is it like every aspect of being a defensive player?
I also always wonder, and it's the same thing that happens for all these type of defensive awards, is how much of the offensive threat gets factored into it.
Right.
Because if you're the defensive player of the year and the justification is that you were an offensive threat, I don't know how much that really... There's something that's always has struck me as kind of it's a disconnect about that.
Yeah.
That it's not... It's not the award for being the best offensive threat with a long pull.
Right, right. I think that's something that, I mean, I think that goes to whatever the voters decided is, because they're just going to vote for, there's some coaches that'll vote for the guy that can stop you know, that they want to stop a guy. And then there's guys that'll vote for, oh, well, this guy's the best all around, like everything together kind of guy. Right. So it's an interesting dichotomy there. And there are some coaches that will do all those things and take all those things into account. Next award.
Before we move on, yeah, though, I'm gonna mix discussions because it's about the same players, yeah, and talk about the Toon Squad because
okay,
all those guys that we just mentioned, not a lot of them appearing on the defense of the Toon
Squad. That's correct.
And so I want you to explain that decision.
I don't think that we value transition as much on the Toon Squad. That's my explanation. I advocated for White in our preliminary discussions of assembling said Toon Squad. I did advocate for Joel White. Scott Radliff is on the team, so I mean,
right? No, he's the one. But then you had Brody Merrill,
right?
And Brandon Mullins.
Well, we wanted to represent Canada with another guy other than Junior because Canada is an integral part of the world. So we wanted to have two representatives. And I think, you know, Brandon Mullins, I don't know, man. Like, I had fun writing the Brandon Mullins section, so I can't really be like, oh, we did it because of this. Maybe we did it because it was more fun to write about. I don't know. I think Fletcher is fair. Fletcher got third place. I don't know. I it's a good question. I definitely did advocate for White. I didn't advocate for Manly. I will say that. White was in preliminary discussions, but we weren't sure where to put him LSM D-wise. So that's really the only explanation I have for him not being in there is that he just barely made it. He would be like the fourth guy or fifth guy if you count the LSM.
That's fair. Well, if you're going to pick a second LSM,
yeah,
after Ratliff,
he would.
It's a tough. It's like being the second goalie. Like there's only it's you can't. If you're for the exercise of picking the team, it's right, tough to pick it. You have to pick two LSMs, then you got to have like you have a second midfield and like a fourth attack.
Maybe. Right. And to be fair, we did do that. By the way, we made an entire team. We did. The Space Jam article has been going on for 2 months as like secret emails between me and Chris. So, yeah, we had a whole team at one point, and we had to whittle it down. And, you know, we wrote certain stuff for certain guys that we thought was good. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor. You know, there's a lot of stuff. And for a 3,000-word article to say there's a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor, I mean, you guys got to know. Like, we put a lot into it. We really had a lot of fun with it. So, you know, that's a fair question, but I feel like I've answered it adequately. And, you know, I can apologize to Mike Manley when I see him next. Sorry, you're not on the Toon Squad, bro. You're a very good defender. You won Defender of the Year with your teammate on a great defense. So should have been considered.
Well, that I think that, yeah, having who had the best MLL season doesn't necessarily mean that you were the best player.
Yep.
But I felt like there needed to be the defense I thought was by far the most suspect.
Really? You're not going to pick on the stats decisions. Pick? Or stats? Sorry. You're not going to go after that? A lot of people disagree with it.
No, I think that's the other... By far, because I felt like so, the Pinnell, Junior, Rabel, Schreiber, Ratliff, and Galloway picks were, and to a certain extent Fletcher, if you're, I want to say unassailable, but they're it's hard to disagree with them,
right?
And I think that's where the picks that I thought were most open, easiest to criticize. I think the Stotts pick was definitely up there, but I think Brody. I would put Brody Merrill and Mullins picks. I would the top two most debatable picks.
You're a well-known Mullins, and then Mullins detractor, my friend. You're a well-known Mullins detractor.
No, well, I am. I think it's a false. I think I don't want to get into too much of a side discussion, but I think that was only because I just thought he was overrated. I think he's bad.
So here's my thing with Mullins, right? And this goes back to the draft where I let, and this is a mistake by me. This is the Kyle is Wrong podcast. I let other coaches, when I was talking about ranking players, do different things about, you know, have different ranks for my guys, right? Like, I would talk to the coaches and be like, okay, are you doing this? Are you doing that? Like, who do you think is the top D guy? And I got talked out of Mullins, man. And I should have gone with my gut. I should have been like, Mullins is my dude. He's my dude. I'm going to ride with him. I should have had him the highest ranked defender, and I didn't. I messed up. Sorry.
Right, and I think my take on Mullins was just always that I thought when he was a first-team All-American, he should have been more like third team.
Right.
And that's,
but pro prospects, man, I just thought that he was a monster. And I think I've been proven right, by the way, of that stance.
And I thought he was a better... I thought he was going to be a better MLL player than he was a college player.
And
that I think there were guys who had better... who would deserve to be a second-team All-American in place of him in college that I wouldn't have picked over him in the MLL draft.
And I think you're right. I think that's borne out.
And it's a case where when you say that I'm a well-known Mullins attractor, it's the difference of I didn't think he was one of the best three or four defenders in college, but I thought he was one of the best 10 or 12.
Yeah.
And so to say that he's, you know, one of the 10 best defenders in college lacrosse, and to say that I'm a Mullins, well-known Mullins detractor, I don't think that's quite
fair. I was being facetious.
I know. No, but it was an interesting, that's actually the first time that I ever spoke to Kevin Rice.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the things that he said to me was that I need to be nicer to Brandon Mullins. Yeah,
I bet it is. Let's roll through. Let's get to Offensive Player of the Year. I mean, are we surprised by Padel destroying this award? Because I think we need the least amount of discussion on this. It was cut and dry, right?
No, I think it would have been awkward for him not to get a postseason award the year that he broke the single-season points record.
Super awkward. Agree.
And I think if you're not going to give him the MVP, he almost has to be the Offensive Player of the Year.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the combination of that now leads to the awkward situation where Rabel ties the record for points by a midfielder and doesn't get any of the postseason awards.
And you give it to Schreiber instead, which, you know, I think we talked about this earlier. Those 36 assists, man, that's the most impressive thing. And also, people that haven't watched the machine as closely, the other thing that Schreiber has done is he's added an element of explosive dodging, and not just to get his hands free, to get to the cage. He has diving goals this year. I don't know if he had one, maybe he had one or two, but he's got at least four or five this year where he just, like, straight went for it. Like, didn't hold back, went nuts and just dunked it on a goalie.
He's had some in the past. I remember doing a vine or two of at least one from previous years where he gets underneath guys on the
right
wing. But that's something that we didn't see from him in
absolutely
college.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you couldn't
that,
really
like,
do
for
college,
example.
Yeah. I gotcha.
Well, but I mean, like, there's a Marcus Holman had a couple diving goals. Like, it's something that the fact that Marcus Holman turned into a great crease dive guy is not a surprise, I think, watching his college tape.
Yeah.
But I think for Tom Schreiber, it's something you didn't really see in his college.
Yeah, it's a great addition
sort
to
of
his overall oeuvre, if you will. I think you know, him as an MVP doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's great, and you know, I think that he is well deserving. And especially now that the machine are in the championship game, I think it's awesome that he has a chance to really cement it. I think one more thing we're not talking about. Everyone's talking about Junior in this game. I mean, we should be talking about Kyle Harrison, man. Kyle Harrison, one of the greatest all-around lacrosse player, maybe the great. I actually would say he's the greatest all-around lacrosse player ever.
In terms of, like,
offense,
defense
face-offs? People forget he, in college, maybe not in MLL, but in college, dude was sick at face-offs.
Top 10 face-off guy.
Like, he's the best all-around lacrosse player, I think, ever. I really do.
No, I think he's a guy, when you look at face-offs, though, who the face-off revolution has passed him by.
Sure, but his numbers are still his numbers.
No, I mean, especially his, like, freshman and sophomore year, earlier in his college career, before they relied on him so much on offense.
Right.
No, I mean, I think his freshman year, he was one of the top 10 face-off. He's, like, 60%.
Yeah. And yeah, it's before specialization.
One of the top 10 face-off guys in the
country. It was before specialization took over, but it, you know, it's still how many other midfielders do you know of that could go take a face-off in an MLL game that don't take face-offs now that could win one? No one? Anyone? Has anyone done it?
Oh yeah, no. But I think in terms of his legacy, though, as an overall lacrosse player, no, I think that absolutely deserves to be on the
list. I think that's the tiebreaker. You're arguing for. I think that's the tiebreaker against anyone else is that he took faceoffs and he won them with regularity, and he played defense, and he could score, and he could pass, and he could shoot.
He played D mid on the U.S. team in the World Championships.
Team USA. He's got the ability to impact a game in several different ways. So I think, you know, when you're watching Ohio play, it might be the last time you watch Harrison. Probably not. But, you know, keep that in mind that he's a guy that can change it up, mix it up.
I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if this was his last.
I think if he wins, it might be. I think if he loses, it definitely won't be. But I think if he wins, it might be. I think he's pretty content with where he is. He's a settled dude. He takes it very seriously. But I think, you know, there's something to be said for going out on top, you know? I think that's cool. I hope he doesn't. I'm not being like, yo, I hope he retires. But, like, because I don't. And I think he's great for the game. But I think he's getting a little overshadowed in the coverage, including mine. So I wanted to fix that here in the pod. Kyle Harrison.
That's true. Has he won an MLL championship?
He has not won an MLL championship. Matt Kinnear and I went through all the record books, and we made sure he lost. He lost with L.A., and he lost with the Outlaws against Hamilton, or Toronto at the time, I believe.
Okay.
So
then can we is he potentially the greatest MLL player ever who hasn't won a championship?
Yes. Ooh, good tag.
Because I mean, he also, do you remember though, he's missed a couple years of his prime playing LXM.
Yes. We try not to talk about it, but it definitely happened.
But he's put together enough, I think, of an MLL career that he's potentially... He's certainly in the discussion.
Yeah, I would think he leads the discussion. Yeah, I think he's, again, not getting enough due in any of the previews or any of the literature being written around the game. So I think his impact, too. I mean, he's the third Dodger.
Well, it's tough.
He's the third Dodger in Ohio.
Yeah.
And he still scores. And he gets mad when he gets short-sticked.
But that's why... He's the reason that, but that fact is, that's why their offense is so good, is because their third Dodger is Kyle Harrison.
Absolutely. And that's 100% true. The third Dodger for Denver cycles through. That could be Westberg. It could be, you know, Kavanaugh coming off the bench if he's not playing attack. It could be any number of guys, really. It could be Mike Bockley coming off the bench. Playing midfield for a second, like the way the Outlaws work is so different. So it's not just Snyder and Sieverts. They rotate that third guy, but Ohio's been pretty consistent with Harrison as that guy for them, and he's done great work for them. That
contrasts to why the Ohio offense compared, I think, most it's best juxtaposed to the New York offense.
Yes,
which relies so much on Rabel and Pinnell as the 1-2. Or you can Pinnell and Rabel and Pinnell. It's hard.
Yeah.
To, you know, it's number one versus number one guy. Whereas the machine essentially goes six deep with guys who can dodge, and so they can. It's a pick your poison type of situation. There's just so many options for them. On
that's why they're hard to cover. Impossible.
Oh yeah, because Kyle Harrison is arguably their third dodging midfielder.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's why I brought up the point of them, you know, losing to the Blaze. They don't really get beat, per se. They beat themselves. And by the way, they can beat themselves pretty easily. Like, if they do get it, they're an emotional team, man. Like, I don't care what anyone says watching them play. The one advantage, I would say, intangible-wise, of Denver over Ohio, over anything else, is that Denver doesn't ever get down. You know, when you're 2-6 and you come all the way back and you make the playoffs, you can't get down. There's no way. You have no choice but to keep plugging away. And that's the one thing I think that Ohio, you know, and it's not questioning their mental strength. I think mentally they're all there. I don't think that's the point I'm trying to make. I think the point I'm trying to make is if they do badly themselves and they know it's their fault, that gets to them. that actually is something that impacts their bottom line, which I think, you know, we need to pay attention to in the championship game that's being played Saturday.
So you think is that what keys to the game? A good start for Ohio?
Yes, absolutely. If Ohio starts slow, it's way better for Denver than it is for any other team that they've played. Because if Denver starts fast, they're going to stay fast. And then the way you're going to stop them is by having them commit stupid penalties, which, by the way, they also do. Like, they have more bench penalties than any other team in the league. That bench is kind of a mess. And they don't care. That's what they thrive on. They thrive on other people screwing up. So you better clear right. You better ride. Or you'll get burnt, because they will hit the over-the-top pass with ease, and they will take it right to you. That's what they did to the Lizards at least twice in that game, and scored off of it both times. So look out for the long bomb from Jack Kelly, and kind of stay in there, stay in the pocket, get an early lead. I think the keys for Denver, you know, just go nuts. Like, play fast. Everything fast, 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 fast. Don't slow down. Play as fast as you possibly can. Don't get sucked into controlling the tempo with Ohio, because you'll lose. And I think that's really what the game's going to come down to. Yes, there are individual performances that matter and guys that need to step up. But at the end of the day, just looking at both teams' tendencies, if it's a wide-open game, Denver wins. If it's a more controlled tempo, then Ohio wins. And I think the chances of us having a close game are pretty low. I think it's going to be one or the other. I think it's going to be like 4 or 5 goal win for whichever team wins.
I think I would take that bet.
Yeah.
Under 4.5.
Under 4.5? Okay. You heard it here first. We'll put it up. See who takes it. I don't think we have any influence on the betting lines, but that'd be nice.
I'm not sure that is. But that's not even predicting the winner. That's just... It's a much different bet.
Right. Well, what's the over-under?
It's
like what, 34? We went 34.
That seems a little high.
Okay.
Because I mean, that's a in order to break that, that's an 18-17 game.
Okay.
Which is that's above average for the MLL. It's not wouldn't be surprising if that's the total.
Okay.
But
I was just thinking offensively, think, both these teams are so good, and defensively they're both so overrated that, like, I think goals are going to happen.
Right. But I mean, you have, like, there are MLL games that end up being 14-8. There are 22-goal games.
Okay. So what would you put it at? You put it at, like, 26, 24?
No, I was going to say, I think 29, maybe.
Okay.
29 means the on average is a 15-14 game.
All right, that's a good shout. I just don't think, and I think especially for a championship game, having a lower GAA or an average GAA is makes a lot of sense. Except in this case, where you have a team that like does not care and will go to cage.
Oh yeah, well,
over and over.
Well,
and over.
I mean, I think that is does account. I think 29. I think 29 or 29.5 is above the league average.
Yeah.
Or is it? That's about.
It's around there. It's around there.
It's around there. I don't know. I have really. This is just off the top of my head. I haven't looked into. I've never attempted to set MLL over unders. So if I'm way off,
oh, there's a lot of money in that, man. I don't think you have to. I think we're at a good spot. But you're going with Ohio, right? That's your pick.
I really want to
go with Ohio, man. I really want to. The stories are so much better with Ohio, but.
I think you have to pick Denver just because Aburn came on in the last.
Yeah, and called me out. Yeah, probably should do that.
And said that you are going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and also like I want to pick. I'm going to reverse jinx. I'm going to jinx Denver by picking them, and just to get back at Matt Bocklet chirping me on Twitter. That's what I'll do. Just kidding. I think I'll pick Denver. I think Jack Kelly, it validates, you know, what I've said about Jack Kelly since the draft and all of the last two seasons of covering Brown. He's a phenomenal goalie. And I think that's the takeaway. I think maybe better goalie doesn't win, and doesn't happen a lot in the MLL for sure, but I'm going to go with Denver. And I think it's Denver by 4 And only because
no, you just said that whoever's win is going to win by four.
Yeah,
or five
and
goals.
I said four, so I think it's Denver by four. And because they built, you know, a commanding lead, and Ohio comes back, but Denver keeps coming at them and keeps the tempo high. I think Denver wins by four, like 16-12. That's a little low, right? That's around what we're saying.
Yeah, didn't you just have the over under at 34, and now you're going to pick a total of
28? I was a hypothetical over under. I was okay. Going high. I always aim high for goals. I always want to see more goals.
Okay,
that's my contention, but. And in the end, I think you're right with the over-under, and I was wrong. And again, it's the podcast of Kyle being wrong, so me picking Denver basically just means Ohio's going to win. So you win. Everybody wins, except for me and Denver. It's all good.
Okay, well, I think this about wraps things up for part two of our unexpectedly long podcast today. Do you want to plug? I guess you can follow me on Twitter at LaxFilmRoom. Also on Snapchat at the same place, on Instagram at Lacrosse Film Room.
You can also follow me on Twitter at the Kyle Devitt, THEKYLEDEVITTE. You can follow me on Instagram at the same thing if you want, but it's really boring. I just post pictures of shoes and lacrosse sticks. And also check out InsideLacrosse.com for all of my coverage and Chris Rosenthal's coverage, as well as stories from Terry Foy, our publisher, and Matt Kinnear, editor-in-chief on John Grant Jr.
And you should really, if you haven't already, go read the Toon Squad article.
Yes, please go read that. And we're trying to get Shea Serrano.
Lacrosse space.
We're trying to get Shea Serrano and Bill Simmons to read it, just because, like, we want them to read it. And they're kind of our, like, literary.
And they will not know who any.
That's okay. It's all about the tone. We tried to set a tone.
That's fair.
And it's a fun tone.
That's fair.
Fun times. Check out the Toon Squad article. Thanks to everybody that joined us today. And by everybody, I just mean Dan Abern, who's not in the room still. But hot takes everywhere, and we will see you guys next week with a new MLL champion.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.